Hello! Welcome back to The Villain Edit, where two allegedly smart people talk about the dumb reality shows they watch. I'm Monty Ashley.
And I'm Rias Hall.
And if you're just now listening to this episode because it's 2020 and this show has been going on for years and years, and you wanted to know what was it like at the beginning when they hadn't really figured it out, welcome back. Now, right now, it's February 2017, the distant past. And here in the distant past, we're watching shows like Forged in Fire. Forged in Fire, this week, they did not have to saw up a lawnmower or anything. Each of them had different challenges.
Yeah, one guy had to make a knife by combining two pieces of metal and kind of, it was supposed to be kind of like a taco with the harder metal inside, or the softer metal inside and the harder metal outside.
Harder inside, softer outside, I think.
I think so.
Yeah, that way the core is sharp, but the outside is malleable. Anyway, he didn't do very well, and his knife was full of cracks, so he went home on the first hurdle. Then the next guy, his knife broke on the second hurdle.
Right. Now, the next guy had to make his knife using a
canister Damascus.
Canister Damascus. That's where you put some ball bearings or other chunks of metal into a canister.
Fill in the gaps with dust.
Fill in the caps with basically shavings of some other kind of metal. And melt it all together till it makes a nice pattern. And then take the outside layer off, which is the canister, and you use the metal inside to make the knife.
Now, the part where you take the canister off turns out to be an incredible hassle.
Yes, I've never seen anyone do this successfully, even when they do line the canister with
Whiteout.
Whiteout is what you use.
That's the official thing. As part of this guy's process, he had a couple bottles of Whiteout, which, of course, everybody has in their lab. It can't be a lab. Garage.
Their forge.
And he just drilled out the middle with one of the giant drills and just glopped the whole thing in.
So it looked like there was enough in there, but no, he could not get the canister off.
Yeah, at this point we are basically canister Damascus experts in that whenever someone tries that, we think, oh, they're going to have trouble getting the canister off. It's exactly like a mold on Face Off. And then at the final challenge, the two guys had to make naginatas, which are a cool medieval Japanese pole arm.
Which everyone who plays D&D has probably had.
Yeah,
I know my character had one.
It's in the Oriental Adventures source book. My first role-playing character that had one was in the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and Other Strangeness role-playing game from Palladium.
Well, that makes perfect sense. It is an Asian weapon. And
yes.
It's a weapon that was wielded a lot by women because it's fairly lightweight. And it's like a pole arm with a sword on the end.
Yeah. Anyway, one of those guys, his handle broke after the very first thing, so he lost. So the winner was the guy whose thing never broke. And it wasn't super satisfying.
Yeah, he didn't seem really satisfied with the wind because he didn't get to test his weapon against the other guy's weapon because the handle broke.
Yeah, it wasn't a super satisfying episode. It did give me a great idea for a future Fortune Fire episode. Like, you know how last week they had to take rifles?
Right, and then melt down the barrels and make... Yeah.
Yeah. I propose they bring in actual plowshares.
And beat them into swords?
Absolutely. Let's turn it the other way around.
Maybe that could be like a Christmas episode.
Take that. We also watched Curse of Oak Island this week.
What did they fail to find this week?
This week, they did not find the crown jewels of France, which FDR allegedly thought were inside Oak Island. They also spent a lot of time looking for these giant drains, which are supposed to be near the water, that it would be full of coconut fiber. And they found some wood that was left there by previous searchers.
But they also found some coconut fiber.
They did.
And they did have previous coconut fiber carbon dated. Because this show just loves to throw money away.
Ugh.
And they found out it was very old coconut fiber indeed.
Now, to be fair, coconut fiber is not really a Nova Scotian thing. So when they found coconut fiber, that was basically the most exciting and plausible thing they've ever found on this show or on this island.
Yeah, It was coconut fiber. But we were all excited by it.
Yeah.
And I felt so emotionally manipulated by the fact that they found some coconut fiber and some dirt.
Speaking of being emotionally manipulated.
Ooh, nice segue.
Let's talk about The Bachelor.
Oh, God.
Now, we've been watching this show for like an episode and a half, maybe two episodes and a half, something like that. So far, this show is mostly about Corinne, who is a baby girl sex monster.
Yes, she's horrible.
I mean, she's... You know the Simpsons episode with Poochie, where Homer Simpson says, whenever Poochie's not on screen, everybody should be saying, "Where's Poochie?"
Yeah, that's pretty much the Corinne edit.
There's a lot of scenes where people say, "Well, Corinne isn't here. I wonder how she's doing." And then we cut to Corinne taking a bath.
Yes. And drinking champagne in the bath. Because...
So with all that, I'm getting pretty sick of the Corinne show. And her fight with Taylor, who is a girl who does not like Corinne, but I don't think is actually any better than Corinne, like, as a person.
Well, I don't think anybody on that show is really reaching top marks for being a great person. But they're on The Bachelor.
But here's the thing, right? Like, that's basically our attitude. We're looking at it going, ha ha, look at these idiots pretending to, like, be in love and just dance around for our reasons. But then, I have to be honest, they're in New Orleans, so naturally they have the Mardi Gras date where they go down Bourbon Street and there's a parade that's just for them. And I think it's like one of those Disneyland parades that just happens three times an hour. And they go to the Mardi Gras Museum that was the site of the final battle in Hard Target.
Oh, yeah, that place where they store all the floats.
Yeah, it's great. A friend of mine got married there. And that was the end of Nick's date with Rachel. And to be perfectly honest, when they were sitting there having their conversation over their dinner, that seemed like a real thing.
Yeah, they both seemed pretty relaxed. They weren't kissing all the time. She wasn't, like, jumping in his lap. They seemed to be having an actual human conversation. I am surprised the editors let that get passed.
Yeah, so full disclosure, I'm now rooting for Rachel just because she does seem to have some sort of actual connection with this guy. And maybe if there's a little more of that, and let's say a little less taking women of color to a plantation.
Yeah, they took all the ladies, they had a group date, and so him and all the ladies went to an allegedly haunted plantation.
I object to the word date here, by the way.
I object to the word ladies, but what am I going to do?
So, they take him to an allegedly haunted plantation, which appears to have been 100% rigged for spooks. Like, there's a chandelier that falls almost to the ground, and things fall off the bookcase. And if they're going all the way with that, this is the best tourist attraction in the world.
Sure, I would go to a plantation where there's a mysterious rocking chair.
Yeah, like, I want a stage magician. I want Teller, specifically, to come in and rig this whole place up so everything is haunted in it.
Exactly.
But they did not say the word plantation, but that's what it was.
They showed a big sign for it that said, "Welcome to the so-and-so plantation."
I mean, it's a giant white house on beautifully kept grounds in the south. And then there was the two-on-one date where Taylor and Corinne go out with Nick.
Oh, my God.
And naturally, each of them only talk about the other one. And see, I don't think Nick's a very good actor, and I could tell he's sick of this.
We were all pretty sick of it at that point.
And they went to a voodoo ceremony.
Well, they went to a thing that involved some people wearing white clothes and dancing around. You know, voodoo is an actual thing, and I'm not sure that was it.
Yeah,
it was awfully touristy.
There was a Vev on the ground at one point.
And there was that statue of Legba.
Yeah, like, and I wouldn't be surprised if some people were drinking rum, even if it was only the big, burly guy who was driving the boat.
Yeah, it seemed like it was very touristy voodoo. Like, the priestess was this white lady in a trilby hat.
Weird.
Which, fine, I understand that there are people that are practitioners, But it was very much like watching those people that claim to, those people who claim to be shaman, but clearly are not. It was...
And then there were tarot cards, which I'm not 100% sure are actually part of the voodoo tradition.
Well, that deck certainly wasn't. It was all Photoshop unicorns and angels.
Yeah, nothing wrong with the Photoshop unicorns and angels.
And there was a voodoo doll, which was completely used inappropriately.
So that part kind of turned us off again, but like I'm still into the show. Enough nonsense happens that I'm entertained. I do wish it were 1 hour instead of 2 hours.
Oh my God, 2 hours of that nonsense is too much.
But it's neat watching a show that's actually well shot and aggressively produced, as opposed to Curse of Oak Island, where they're pretty much just stuck following around these goofballs who are saying, we're going to dig here. No, wait, we're going to dig a hole here.
Let's look at a map of the holes we've dug. Do you think we might have just missed it by a few feet on either side? We'd better dig more holes in between them.
That was a 15-minute scene of them looking at old maps, saying, who made this map? I made that map. Well, this says Fred Nolan made that map. Yeah, I work with Fred Nolan. I work with the devil if it'll get me the answer to Oak Island. Which, okay. Now, there are two new shows we have not talked about yet on the show. One is a returning show, Face Off. We are two episodes in.
I love Face Off, and it's an all-star season, which makes it great.
Yeah. What's interesting to me is this is kind of the same format as the first RuPaul's Drag Race All-Star season, but this is doing it better.
Girl!
Well, hear me out, though. The basic premise for both the first RuPaul's Drag Race All-Star season and the Face Off All-Star season is that people are paired up. So Nico and Kat are a team. They will compete together. They will be eliminated together.
Right. I like that because it gets rid of more people.
Well, it would, except they're only eliminating people once every other week. But here's the thing. In the RuPaul's season, people were assigned randomly and complained about it.
In this season, people were assigned randomly, but they're already happy about it.
They're not assigned randomly. Nico and Kat, for example, are either married or engaged.
I did not know that.
And you've got people who have worked together on things.
Right, because they do special effects work when they're not on the show, so there's some of them have like little businesses together. And
Sig and George are both goofballs, and they work well together. So unlike Drag Race, where Pandora, everybody expected Pandora Box to come in and just sweep the season because she had been unfairly eliminated in her first season on Drag Race, she was paired with, I can't remember, but she was very unhappy with it. But this time, you're not getting that. You're getting people who are teamed with people who they're happy with. And also, because you're eliminating people once every other week, nobody's being destroyed for just one bad job.
It's true. Like, there are people that have been in the bottom a couple... You have to be in the bottom a couple of times before you're eliminated, it seems like.
Yeah. Oh, it was Mimi I'm First that Pandora was teamed with.
And the feeling was that... Pandora.
Exactly. See? And the feeling was that Mimi torpedoed Pandora's chances. But this time, instead of your usual reality show thing where we're on a team and the worst person does a bad job and now I have to go home too, because special effects makeup is a team endeavor.
It really is.
And they're working together. And like at the beginning of each episode when they do their sketches, you actually get to see two people throwing ideas back and forth. What if we did that? I don't know. What if we did this instead? And I think you can see more of the creative process that way. And I really appreciate that.
I do like that.
So far, the people I like have done well. Like,
I'm very fond of Sig.
You are now. Because I remember when Sig Neutron, who has a silly hat and a silly mustache and a silly expression pretty much all the time, you did not seem that big a fan of him at first on his own season.
No, I liked him on his own season. He had that hat. I liked that hat. The only time I wasn't a fan of him was when I saw his photo on the website of people that were going to be on the new season, and I disliked his mustache very much. I felt there was far too much wax in it for television, or really anything. I got a thing about the waxy mustaches. I live in Seattle in a very hipster neighborhood. I went into a store the other day. They had four different kinds of mustache wax. So I'm oversensitive, and I do admit that.
Well, Sig is a goofball. He's teamed with George, who is one of the people I remember from previous seasons. George is often in the background modeling props or goofing around with something he just made to see how it looks. And
he's a good fabricator.
He doesn't make a lot of jokes to the camera, but he's a total goofball.
Oh, yeah.
So Face-Off is here. I'm super happy about it. So far, I'm really enjoying it.
I did. I really enjoyed this week's episode, which was the Angel Demon Challenge. The Angel Devil Challenge, where they had to take one character. They had to take one model and then make them into an angel-devil hybrid. It was an interesting challenge, and they did a really good job on it.
Yeah, the challenge was to take two characters and put them on the same model, which is hard to do.
Unless you do that split down the middle man-woman thing they used to do in vaudeville.
There were a couple of people that went split down the middle, side by side. One team did the face is an angel and the back of the head is a devil kind of burrowing into the angel.
Yeah, I actually really liked that. That was one of my favorites.
The one the judges really liked that I did not care for on television was the one where there's an angel face and there's a devil face kind of glued to the side.
Yeah, that one that was kind of...
There's a South Park character, the school nurse.
Yeah, I know who you mean. Yes, we all know that.
Well, that's what it looked like to me. A lot of these things, it's not clear whether it looks the same to the judges as to us.
Right, because we're watching it in HDTV, and the judges are looking at it under theater lights, but they just have normal eyeballs. So a lot of the stuff...
Not cyber eyes like us.
Not cyber eyes like us. But no, they're looking at it with a different background in education than we are as well.
Oh, yeah.
So... Like, I don't necessarily always agree with them. I did agree with them on this week's elimination because that was a piece of crap.
Yeah. The blondes are gone. That's Stella and Jasmine. I'm sad they're gone, partly because I can identify their team. They're the team of two white-haired ladies.
Yes.
But they were in the bottom in week one, where there was not an elimination. And then they were in the bottom in week two. And then based on both of that, you have to send them home.
Well, based on that and the creature they made was not... It wasn't that great. It just looked like a dude with some devil horns. He looked like a devil from the nose up. And then he kind of had some filigree design on his chest.
Yeah.
And a heart stuck to it, but it didn't look like they had painted the heart. It had lighting effects, but they didn't dim the lights on them when they were on stage so that the lighting effects showed up. And I felt like they spent way too much time arguing about what their concept would be.
They were very late. I will say right now, I write about Face Off for the website previously.tv, so I have to pay a lot of attention to what happens in what segment. While everybody else had finished their design work and was sculpting, Stella and Jasmine were still arguing about what their idea would be.
Yeah.
And
that really cost them in the end.
And then when the mentor, Michael Westmore, came in and gave advice... Then they changed their minds again. And, yeah, they ended up... Ignore that!
That was nothing.
The stuff... I don't know what their vision was for the stuff on the torso, but it really looked like just stuff glued to a torso.
It looked like a makeup I would do. Oh. And I did not do theatrical makeup.
Your makeup's pretty theatrical.
Well, thank you, darling.
Now, let's talk about Hunted.
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 Okay. Let's talk about Hunted.
The premise of Hunted... All right, Hunted... Here's the thing. Hunted doesn't know who its protagonists are.
Okay, so Hunted is a show where teams of quote-unquote normal people go on the run, and then they are tailed by teams of ex-FBI and police investigators to see if they can catch them.
So the principle is... Stay off the grid for 28 days, you win...
A lot of money.
A lot of money. And at that point, I'm in. I think that sounds great. I immediately start wondering, what would I do? How would I get off the grid? How would I stay away from cameras?
Right. Well, it's very hard to stay away from cameras when you're on a reality show because you're being followed by a camera crew.
Yeah. In one episode that's already aired, two people are trying to hide under a bush because their pursuers are too close, and the pursuers find them almost immediately. There's a camera crew right there.
Yeah. They're obviously, the camera crew aren't under the bush because it's a long distance shot of the bush.
But here's the thing. I don't know whether the show wants me to root for the fugitives or the pursuers.
Yeah, it doesn't make that clear.
It spends a lot more time talking about how great the pursuers are and how these are the best in the world. But
they don't really give them that much to do other than say
things like, I'm searching her Facebook friends.
Yeah, or they made a fake wanted poster and put them up. Even the dog is offended by this show.
This is Bianca. She is our third co-host.
Be quiet, dog.
So they spend more time introducing the hunters than the fugitives, which is one of my big problems.
The fugitives are just, they kind of gloss over. They get the standard reality show package.
Well, a short one, though. Like,
well, yeah.
It's just, these two go, go, go.
These guys are friends from high school. They own a business where they create room escapes.
Oh, that guy. Okay, the guy who owns a room escape company. I'm convinced he's only on the show because he wants to practice being a supervillain.
Oh, he totally is. He leaves notes for the investigators.
And he sets up code names for his friends. And the thing is, there's definitely... All right, they can't run the show honestly. Because if people succeed, then what you're doing is showing a documentary of how to escape from the police. Which I don't think the police would be thrilled about.
Right.
And if everybody gets caught, then you're showing a documentary of how powerful the surveillance state is, which some people would be a little uncomfortable with, too.
Yeah, especially these days.
So between those two, they end up having to, I believe, massage the story a lot. I think there are a lot of rules we're not being told. For example, people keep leaving perfectly safe hiding places.
Yeah, they're like, we've got this hiding place. No one knows we're here. There were some people that were just in a cabin out in the woods that had no internet. They were just hanging out there, and then they're like, now we gotta move. So I'm sure that the show producers have rules about you can only stay in the same place for a certain amount of time.
Yeah, because otherwise, those guys that were in the woods, that's it, you're done. You got $100 from your ATM, already have camping supplies. If you're good at camping, you can stay in the woods for 28
days. Yeah, find
yourself
a nice cave.
People on Naked and Afraid can do that without anything.
Yeah.
But there's a great article on realityblurred.com of somebody who has investigated this. A lot of the investigations that the hunters are doing, not real investigations. Because they don't have any of the powers of law enforcement.
Right. They're a reality show. They can't just go into the city hall and say, give me all your CCTV footage.
So we keep seeing...
At least I hope they can't.
We keep seeing shots of traffic cameras that people have to avoid. You don't. The hunters can't access those.
Yeah.
There's an ATM rule where you have $500 in an account. You can only take out $100 at a time. But it looks to me like they're not actually using the ATM. What's happening is they take out the money, and the camera crew that's with them gets a shot from the ATM, and they send that footage to the hunters.
Right, they just hold their camera down where an ATM camera would be, and then they send that footage to the producers, I guess.
Yeah, to the people off screen who say, I think you would have gotten your subpoena by now. Here's your information. But from what we've seen, the hunters are remarkably good guessers. When the team left the woods, they've just been in the woods for like 12 days, completely off the grid, no clue. And they come out of the woods, they go to their friend's house, where they're thrilled because there's a shower and a bed. Immediately, we go to the hunters, where someone says, I've just decided to look at their Facebook feeds.
Who is their best friend?
It's this woman, because she likes a lot of their posts, and also talked with the woman about healthcare. We're going to go send a team to talk to her. on exactly the day that the fugitives have decided to hide out there.
Yeah, it's a little it's a little overproduced.
It's, yeah. But I'm watching it anyway. I am, to be fair, covering that also for Previously.tv.
Well, that's convenient.
Now, it's a great show for second-guessing and Monday morning quarterbacking.
It is. It absolutely is. Because I do watch a lot of Naked and Afraid. So I'm always very angry when they're like, I just have to leave the forest to sleep in a bed. I'm like, you do not. That rock looks perfectly smooth.
Yeah, you've got water purification tablets, you baby. You're living large. So we're certainly going to keep watching that. We're going to keep watching Face Off. Right now, we're still on The Bachelor.
I don't know how much more of The Bachelor I can take.
I'm into it, I think.
Oh, honey.
I think we're going to get rid of Corinne pretty soon, and we're going to find out who some of these other...
nebulous ladies are.
There's so many.
There's like a million of them, and all they want to do is kiss this dude.
Well, it's so weird,
because... like, some of them have never even been on a date, and they're all over him, and it's just like, ladies.
I want to know what he does with his time. Because some days...
I hope he's getting some shots.
Some days his only responsibility is show up for 30 minutes and watch women compete for his affections. And then I assume they lock him into a hotel room with, you know, a razor with just the right amount of stubble guard on it.
Yep.
And
a makeup person.
Yeah. I think that about covers all the shows we watched this last week.
I think so.
Did you watch any shows about monsters inside us or interventions?
Actually, no, I didn't. Oh, I'm watching
My Big Fat Fabulous Life.
Oh, yeah, I do watch that.
Quick update on that. New season, what's happening?
Whitney's pregnant.
Whitney's pregnant?
By the guy that she broke up with last season.
What a
Apparently, they've been having some booty calls, and one of them took.
What a shocking development.
It is a shocking development. And she had to tell him about it this week because she'd been hiding it from him because she was all freaked out, as you would be. And then she told him about it and she was expecting him to say, I'm leaving. But he said, look, I'll help you out with this however I can. Because I think, honestly, I think that this guy's a really good guy. I don't think he's the guy that she should marry and spend her life with. But from what I've seen of him... he's a really nice guy. Plus, he talks a lot about his Dungeons & Dragons characters on his website, and I find that super endearing.
People on that show seem really decent. Like, I saw that she was kind of mean to her roommate.
Yeah, and now they're friends again.
Good, because all I've ever seen is her roommate helping her out when she needs help.
And, like, her mom, last week, she was getting a massage from a friend of hers, a girlfriend. And she was naked in her bed with this other woman, and her mom walked in the room. And she explained, I'm not gay, I'm completely straight, this is just me getting a massage from my friend. And her mother, this week, made a special point of coming out and saying, look, if you're bisexual, that's fine with us, we love you. And it was just a really beautiful... probably producer-initiated, but still, it was a beautiful moment, and it was really nice.
If producers want to initiate people being nice to each other...
yeah, I'm all over that.
I'm totally in favor of that. I think that will wrap it up for this week. Still don't have a good catchphrase.
Pretty much it. Still don't have a catchphrase, but we don't need one, because we're too excellent. I'm sorry I said that.
That ain't gonna stick. Okay, bye!
Bye!